Today's episode is brought to you by Beekeepers Naturals. You and your family deserve to feel your best all day, every day, which is why Beekeepers Naturals creates a clean, science-based remedy that naturally supports your daily health. We especially love the Bee Soothed cough syrup. Bee Soothed contains no dyes, no drugs, no dirty chemicals or refined sugars. When you think of cough syrup, you think of that bitter, artificial taste, but this one is actually really nice. It has a lightly sweet, sort of natural berry flavour. And if you're feeling lousy, you can take it to promote recovery and soothe your throat. Or as soon as you feel a tickle, you can use it to support your immune system. Bee Soothed isn't the only Beekeepers product that we love. As podcasters, we talk a lot. The Propolis Throat Spray is a daily defender, and when it comes to supporting your immune system and soothing a scratchy throat, you can take 4 sprays each morning and the natural immune supporting sprays soothe your throat and promote recovery. Propolis is what bees use to defend their hives from germs. It's the hive's immune system, and if it's good enough for the bees, it's good enough for me. Get some natural immunity support in your medicine cabinet. The cough syrup always sells out quickly, so be sure to snatch it up while you can. You can save 15% off your order by going to beekeepersnaturals.com/crimelapse. That's beekeepersnaturals.com/crimelapse to get 15% off your order. Meet your new medicine cabinet with Beekeepers Naturals.
This episode is brought to you by Yarn. Yarn is an interactive storytelling app where stories are told as text messages between main characters. Genres range from romance to comedy, horror to action, and more. It also offers video and audio-only episodes to watch or listen to on your phone in a few minutes. Running out of shows to binge? Check out some of the hit series on the Yarn app. Millions, yes you heard that right, millions have already binged some of their top series, Mystery Dog, Modern Dating, and Haunted Camper. The format is a little different than traditional TV series. Imagine binging your favourite characters and series through text interactions right through your phone. Almost making it real. Addicting, right? Tap through the most addictive and immersive series today only on Yarn. Trust me, with over 27 million downloads, Yarn is a must play. Download Yarn for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Y-A-R-N. Download it today to watch, read and listen to all your favourite fiction stories. From steamy to horror, Yarn has it all. Welcome to Crime Lapse. I'm Eileen.
And I'm Charlie.
Before we begin, we just want to take a minute to thank our patrons for their support this year. Crime Lapse is an independent podcast, and your pledge helps to fund the show. Your support helps to pay for research, hosting fees, and everything else that comes with creating a show. Thank you for your support. If you want to become a patron, you can join us on patreon.com/crimelapse. At around 3 a.m. on September 23rd, 2015, residents of Westbury Park, Bristol, were awoken by the sound of agonising pleas for help coming from the street. A man, dressed in just his boxer shorts, was running blindly down the road, screaming in pain. As members of the public tried to assist him, they thought that he had mud on his face. But when they asked what had happened, he told them that someone had thrown acid on him. When he was asked who did it, he was audibly terrified and answered, "My ex." This is indirect causation.
Just before 3 a.m, a 999 call was made by a resident of Westbury Park. He had been smoking a cigarette in his garden when he heard a man calling out for help.
Ambulance service, what's the address of the emergency?
I'm not sure. I've just met a man who...
What's the address, my love, please?
I am on Berkeley Road in Westbury Park.
Berkeley Road in Westbury Park. Okay, and whereabouts on that road are you? Just outside, or?
The very bottom of the road. Basically, I heard a shouting in my garden. I came out and there's a gentleman shouting for help.
Okay, so he's in Berkeley Road, Westbury Park.
Yeah.
Bottom of the road. Okay, bear me a second. Okay, so he's actually in the road, is he?
Yeah, he is, yeah. Mate, it's okay.
Okay, well, tell me exactly what's happened.
I was in my garden having a cigarette and I heard a gentleman shouting from a distance away. I went out into my road to investigate and basically he's just shouting for help and...
Can you ask him what's happened?
I'm not sure what's happened. Excuse me, mate. Excuse me. Hello? Yeah. What's happened, please?
Somebody
threw acid over his face, apparently.
Did acid thrown over his face?
Yeah.
Okay, bear me a second. Is the attacker still nearby?
Is the who did it to you, please?
His
ex.
All right, my love. Is she still there, or has she gone?
Is he or she still here?
I don't know.
That's okay,
no,
that's about it, don't worry.
Yeah,
okay.
No, he's on the way.
So you have acid thrown over his face?
And body, yeah.
The Good Samaritans tried to lead him to a nearby house to shower off the chemicals, but he became distraught as they walked in the direction of the house he'd run out of. When they brought him to another house, the residual acid on his skin corroded a metal doorbell as he entered the home. Emergency services arrived at the scene shortly afterwards and found the man with severe chemical burns to his face, chest, abdomen, and thighs. The victim was repeatedly telling the paramedics that he could not see, and even asked them if he still had eyelids. An officer at the scene could see that the victim's eyes had turned grey, and his irises had essentially dissolved. The man was identified as Mark van Dongen, a 27-year-old Dutch native. In the ambulance, Mark was crying out in pain and was given gas and air to try and calm him down. An officer travelled with him to the hospital, and when he asked him who had thrown the acid on him, Mark gestured to a tattoo on his stomach and said, "She needs to go to prison for this." The tattoo bore the name Belina. He also asked the police to make sure his friend Violet was okay, as he feared that she was in danger too. Mark was taken to Southmead Hospital. In a decontamination room, he caught a glimpse of his own reflection and recoiled in horror, screaming. He told the doctors, "Kill me now. If my face is going to be left looking like this, I don't want to live." Mark had given the police enough information to know where to find the suspect. They entered a flat in Westbury Park where Belinda Wallace resided. Inside, they found her sitting on the couch. She had told them she'd been distressing some fabric as she was a fashion student, and told the officers that the substance was acid. Belinda was taken to Patchway Police Station and interviewed over the course of the next 24 hours. Detective Constable Patrick Prescott was present at the interview. Belinda told the detective that she didn't know it was acid in the glass. She thought Mark had put water in the glass.
And Mark would have been the only person that could have put the acid in that glass.
Yeah, he did, you know, because he said to me it was water. I've got water for you, right. You know, like come and take your medication and go to bed. He wanted me to burn my insides. Can you imagine?
Well, yeah, it would be awful, yeah.
No, it's not. You know, it's just like this man betrayed me.
When he told you it was acid, what else did he say, if anything? Obviously, I wasn't there, but I can imagine his reaction would have been somewhat alarming, perhaps.
Yeah, he said, "You threw acid at me."
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, that's when, you know, and then, you know, I just realized it was.
Okay.
You know, like, and like a smelly, and, you know, like in the house, and then, and he was saying, "Oh, it hurts, you know, and then, you know, like, that's when I wanted to help him.
And I appreciate I probably know the answer to this, but I will ask you anyway. Why didn't you call the ambulance?
You know, I was just like confused and about loads of things. Like, I was confused.
Belinda told the investigator that Mark had tried to get her to drink the contents of the glass, and when they argued, she threw it into his face. When asked why she didn't call an ambulance, she answered that she was confused. She was then charged with throwing a corrosive substance with intent to cause harm and remanded into custody.
Mark van Dongen was born in the Netherlands in June 1987. When his parents separated in 2000, Mark stayed living with his mother before going to move in with his father. Mark contracted HIV after a brief relationship with a woman and got engaged to a man with whom he lived with in the Netherlands. Mark moved to the UK in 2011 and studied at the University of Bristol after meeting a South African woman named Berlina Wallace on an online dating site for people with HIV. He began dating the woman, who was 18 years his senior, and to everyone else it seemed like a good relationship, until Mark finally had enough and disclosed that Berlina was abusive. Berlina was a part-time fashion student, but she rarely attended classes. In 2014, Berlina threw boiling hot water over Mark after an argument. She would also hit herself in the face and threatened to tell the police that he had hit her if he ever left. In 2015, Mark met a woman named Violet online, and they began seeing each other. Berlina was furious and would attack Mark, harass him, and threaten to kill herself. Mark was living in a hotel. In early September, she began calling Mark's new partner. She would stay silent on the calls, but the message was clear. It was a threat. In a 999 call made on September 2nd, Mark told the dispatcher that he had split up with his girlfriend and she was continuously calling him and threatening to blackmail him. Mark said in the call, "She kept on crying and crying, like hyperventilating and everything. When I left her to start off with, she tried to kill herself. She took a handful of pills and she said she would stab herself if I was going to leave her. Now she constantly keeps calling me and now she just called to say that I'm going to call the police saying that you download child porn. She keeps screaming." Mark was told to go to the police station and report it, which he did the following day. He spoke with PC Katie Bettle and told her that his new girlfriend Violet had been receiving calls and messages from his ex Berlina, and PC Bettle told him that she would make it clear to Berlina that if she continued, it would be considered harassment. Mark had told work colleagues and friends about Berlina's abuse. He told Colin Evans, who he worked with, that Berlina had scratched him all over his back and that she had threatened to kill him if he ever left her. The day after Mark went to the police station, Berlina was informed of his report and attempted to take an overdose. She was taken to hospital and discharged the following day. Berlina's unpredictable behaviour put a strain on Mark's new relationship, as he felt a sense of responsibility to her after being together for so long. Mark continued to offer to pay for Berlina's rent and education and promised to transfer money to her every week. Berlina told Mark that she wanted to return to South Africa, and he went back to the flat they had shared to help her. They argued and Berlina said she was going to stay in a hotel, but later that night, she threw a container of 98% sulfuric acid onto his face. When Mark felt the pain, he sat up, which caused the acid to fall onto his bare chest and legs. Mark van Dongen suffered severe injuries, full thickness burns to 25% of his body, extensive trauma to his face, chest, abdomen and legs. And because of the extent of the injuries, the police had to try and track down his family in Belgium, which took over a week. That whole time, Mark had been alone in intensive care. His brother Bart didn't recognise him when he arrived at Southmeath Hospital. Skin grafts meant that 40% of Mark's body was affected by the acid attack, and he was severely disfigured. For months after, Mark was in a coma and required dozens of specialists providing round-the-clock care in an isolated ward on the ICU. Doctors had to amputate Mark's lower left leg. He lost his left eye and most of the sight in his right eye. When he regained consciousness, he was unable to communicate or speak. He could only stick out his tongue to indicate positively, when his father pointed to letters of the alphabet. Mark's father, Case, would drive from Belgium to Bristol every weekend to be by his son's bedside. He would have to sleep in his van after spending 22 hours a day helping to care for Mark. The pain was relentless, and the itching of his countless scars would make it beyond uncomfortable. Mark was unrecognisable. He lost his eye, nose, ear, and he looked nothing like the happy, smiling young man his family knew. Mark was confined to a hospital bed and suffered from many complications like chronic urinary tract infections, chest infections, increased blood pressure, septicemia, critical illness neuropathy, which left him paralysed from the neck down. The acid had destroyed his muscles down to the bone, causing him to lose all of his independence and become severely depressed. It took 8 months for Mark to recover enough to be interviewed by the police in Southmeath Hospital. The interviews were recorded.
In November 2016, after over a year of hospitalisation, Mark requested to be transferred from Southmead Hospital to a care home so that he could have a life outside of a hospital ward. On the day he arrived at the care home, he became distraught at the realisation that his quality of life would not improve there, and he called his dad in tears, pleading with him to come to him. Mark's father travelled over from Belgium, and that same day he organised a special ambulance to transport them both back to the Maria Hospital in Overpelt, Belgium. When Kees arrived at the care home, he could hear his son's cries from the car park. When he went into Mark's room, he found him screaming in pain and lying in his own excrement. Mark had wanted to stay in the UK because he had Violet and he had been promised one-to-one care. But the care home was not equipped to carry out the care that Mark required. In the hospital in Belgium, Mark was placed in the palliative care unit. He'd suffered immensely, and he was tiring of a life that he was living. Mark asked his father to help him fill out a form to apply for euthanasia. Assisted suicide is legal in Belgium under the 2002 Belgium Act on Euthanasia. In the Act, euthanasia is defined as the intentional termination of life by a person other than the person concerned at the latter's request. A physician who performs euthanasia commits no criminal offence when they ensure that there is a 30-day gap between the request and the act of euthanasia if the physician believes that the applicant is clearly not expected to die in the near future. The patient is legally competent, conscious and of the age of maturity when making the request, that the request is completely voluntary, well considered and repeated, and that the patient is in a medically futile condition of constant and unbearable physical or mental suffering that cannot be alleviated. This must be confirmed by two physicians. Mark's father was heartbroken at his son's request, and he asked him to come and live with him in his home, but Mark said that it would just be another ceiling to look at. Kay said that he would accept Mark's wishes if he agreed to meet with specialists, and if they said that he had no hope of improving, then Kay would let him go. Mark saw over half a dozen doctors and neurologists, and they all agreed that his condition was permanent and he would not improve. Mark applied for euthanasia on December 1st, 2016. Mark was in constant pain and discomfort. The acid had torn through his muscles and his bones were hurting. His countless scars itched incessantly, and he was confined to a hospital bed. He developed a lung infection after his arrival, and the doctors advised him to be intubated. But Mark didn't want to do that. Intubation carried a 96% risk that he would lose his voice, and it had taken him so long to regain the ability to speak, and he didn't want to lose that again. Mark wanted to be able to speak to his father until the very last moment. On January 2nd, 2017, a catheter was inserted into Mark's heart, and he was administered a lethal dose of medication, ending his unbearable physical and psychological suffering. Not only had his body been destroyed by the acid attack, but his organs had been damaged too. Septicemia weakened his kidneys and caused digestive problems. The high level of opiates he was prescribed to try and manage his intolerable pain had side effects that caused him extra problems. Mark Van Dongen was cremated on January 5th, 2017.
Berliner was due to stand trial for throwing a corrosive substance with intent in January, but the Crown Prosecution was informed that Mark had died. On February 3, 2017, Berliner Wallace was brought to Bristol Crown Court and charged with the murder of Mark Van Dongen. This was the first fatal acid attack in the UK. Berliner was remanded into custody again after the attack. She had denied throwing the sulfuric acid with intent to burn, maim, disable, disfigure and cause grievous bodily harm. The initial trial was postponed as investigators were trying to continue their inquiries by going to Belgium. Prosecutor Rachel Drake said in the Sun newspaper, "Police are travelling to Belgium to obtain the breadth of information that is needed for the Crown to make a decision on what they want to do next." The court case was scheduled to begin later that spring. The defence filed an application to dismiss the murder charge, but High Court Judge John Royce dismissed this request. Justice Royce said that he believed a jury would conclude that Berliner Wallace deliberately and unlawfully threw sulfuric acid over Mark Van Dongen, intending to at least cause him grievous bodily harm. Justice Royce said the authorities had been broadly consistent in relation to the causation direction, which the jury would have been advised in relation to the murder charge. They would have to be sure that Berliner's act of throwing the acid was a cause of death. It did not have to be the sole cause, as long as it was a substantial cause. The defence had submitted that Mark's euthanasia was a free, deliberate and informed decision, thus breaking the chain of causation in circumstances where he likely would have survived otherwise. Justice Royce compared the situation to a victim being taken to a cliff top and set on fire. If that victim then threw themselves off the cliff and died from the fall, the act of setting them alight would have been at least a substantial cause of the victim's death. Justice Royce said, "The jury would be entitled to say that Mr. Van Dongen's medically futile condition was constant and unbearable. In those circumstances, the jury could conclude his decision to undergo euthanasia did not break the chain of causation. They might even be entitled to say the defendant's act was the main or principal cause of death. They would certainly, in my judgment, be entitled to say it was at least a substantial cause." Justice Royce said that Mark's decision to choose euthanasia was taken because of his disturbing injuries, blindness, disfigurement, paralysis, loss of limb, and life of pain, frustration, disability, and suffering. The trial began in November 2017. The prosecution's case was that Berliner Wallace intended to cause Mark Van Dongen serious harm. A number of witnesses testified at the trial. The jury were shown a video Mark had made in the hospital where he detailed the attack and identified his attacker as his ex-girlfriend, Berliner Wallace. In this video, Mark is lying in his hospital bed and says that he remembers waking up as Berliner was laughing and said that if she couldn't be with him, then no one could before she threw the acid over his face. Mark said, "I hope you can see the way I look now. This is because of you. I will be a thing upon your conscience for now and forever. You stood at the end of my bed and you said, 'If I can't have you, no one can.' And then you laughed. You evil woman, you laughed. And then you threw sulfuric acid over me." Prosecutor Adam Vitalingham told the jury that Berliner had been abusive before and Mark had moved into a hotel and was seeing someone else. He was worried about Berliner though, as her mental state was poor and she was self-harming, so he went to the house they had shared to visit her. When Mark fell asleep, Berliner came up to the room and doused him in acid that burned through his flesh and muscles. The searing pain caused him to sit up and the remnants of the acid fell onto his torso, arms and legs. The prosecutor said, "The defendant had bought a bottle of sulfuric acid online from Amazon. As Mark was sleeping in bed, she poured the acid into a glass. She threw the glass of sulfuric acid into his face. It covered his face and parts of his upper body and dripped down to his lower body as he moved. Covered in burning acid, Mark ran out into the street in his boxer shorts, screaming for help. Bernina sat on the couch, ignoring Mark's cries for help as he ran into the street. After months of prolonged physical and mental suffering Mark sustained from the acid attack, he opted for euthanasia in a Belgium hospital. Mr. Vitalingham told the jury that the suffering and decision to end his own life were directly caused by the attack. He said, "If that is right, we say, then she is guilty of murder." The prosecutor told the court that Berlina had been researching acid attacks prior to carrying out her assault on Mark. She had been searching the internet for answers to questions like, "Can I die from drinking sulfuric acid?" and bought the acid on September 2nd. It was Berlina's contention that she did not know what was in the glass. She thought it was water. Her barrister, Richard Smith, told the jury to keep an open mind. He said that the defence believed that Mark Van Dongen put the acid in the glass and tried to encourage Berlina to drink it. He cited their complicated relationship and said that Mark wanted Berlina to drink the acid because she had been blackmailing him. The jury listened to the 999 call made by Mark on September 2nd when he reported Berlina for harassment and blackmail. Mark's father Case told the court that it took his son 4 months to be able to communicate with him. And it was when Case had a sheet of paper with the alphabet on it, Mark would indicate the letter he wanted by sticking out his tongue. PC Thomas Green testified about the night of the attack. He said that when he arrived at the flat, he could smell potent chemicals. And in the ambulance with Mark, Mark had pointed to a tattoo on his stomach that read Berlina when he was asked who the offender was. The court heard that Mark and Berlina had rekindled their relationship prior to the attack, and text messages showed that they were planning on working things out, but Mark was still seeing his new girlfriend, Violet. In the ambulance, Mark had asked the officer to check on Violet. Witnesses who aided Mark in the street that night described thinking that he had grey-coloured paint poured over him. On November 15th, Berlina's barristers said that there was no case to answer on the murder charge and there was no legal causation. Presiding Judge Justice May dismissed the murder charge and said, "When Mark Van Dongen made the brave, desperate, profoundly sad decision that his life, with such appalling disability, was so burdensome that he preferred to leave it, and when the doctors opened the door for him to go and ushered him through, his choice in death, in law, from the culpable activity which caused his dreadful injuries. In my view, a jury, properly directed, could reach no other conclusion, and for that reason I have decided that the case of murder must be withdrawn from them." The murder charge was dismissed by Justice May and the prosecution appealed the decision at the Court of Appeal. The jury were dismissed and the trial was rescheduled to the following year. In March 2018, the Court of Appeal ruled that the murder charge would remain, and the trial was due to begin again in April of that year.
This episode is brought to you by Best Fiends. This casual but challenging puzzle game is the perfect break from life for us. Lately, I've been using it when I'm standing waiting for dinner to cook or when I need a bit of a break from work. My favourite part is the fact that I can connect with my friends and family on there. I love comparing my little characters with Eileen's. This amazing mobile puzzle game is much more than your average puzzle game. It's rated 5 stars with over 100 million downloads. There's thousands of levels, super cute characters to collect, with a whole world right there in your hands. It's engaging, it's bright and colourful, and the graphics and stories are great too. There are new in-game challenges and events every month, so the game always feels fresh and renewed. You don't even need Wi-Fi to play.
Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Opening for the prosecution, Mr. Vatelingham again outlined the prosecution's case. He told the jury that Mark Van Dongen began seeing another woman when his relationship with the defendant broke down in the summer of 2015. Before the attack, they had partially reconciled, but this was because Mark pitied Berlina. She had been threatening to kill herself. and when he reported Belinda to the police for harassment, she went online and purchased sulfuric acid. Mark had told his workmates about Belinda's violent temper, but he felt a duty of care to her and promised to support her financially regardless. He was in her flat on September 23rd when she woke him up saying if she couldn't have him, no one could, and she threw the acid onto his face. After Mark ran out into the street and was taken to hospital, Belinda was initially cautioned and questioned in the flat. She was calm and told the police that it was acid that injured Mark, and she'd been using it to distress some fabric. Mark had suffered burns to 25% of his body. He had to have his lower left leg amputated. He lost the use of his left eye and most of the vision in his right. He would be in pain for the rest of his life, and so he decided to undergo euthanasia to end his suffering. The defence agreed that the case was one of horrible suffering, but said that Belinda Wallace believed it was water in the glass she threw over Mark. The defence said that it was Mark's plan for Belinda to drink the acid and asked the jury to examine both sides of the case. Video evidence was played of an interview Mark had with the police in July 2016. At the time, Mark was in Southmead Hospital. In the interview, Mark says that he and Belinda argued when he said that he did not want to move back in with her. Mark spoke about previous attacks Belinda carried out, where once she threw boiling hot water over his arm and shoulder. He also said that she would hit herself in the face and tell him that she would tell the police that he did it. She also hid his passport to stop him leaving. Mark said that he had only gone back to her flat because he felt sorry for her. On the second day of the trial, Mark's father Case was sworn in as a witness. With the aid of an interpreter, he testified about his life with his son. Case said that Mark had used the alphabet sheet to spell out Belinda after the attack. After over a year in hospital, Mark was looking forward to one-on-one care in a care home. Case said, he was looking forward to the physiotherapy. That is what mattered to him. It was a big step forward. He wanted to stay in England. He was always happy in England and met a girlfriend here. He wanted to return to a normal life. That is what he wanted. He wanted me to return to work. He called me and he was very distressed, so I got in my car and drove straight to Bristol. I thought I would spend an hour napping in my car. I heard Mark scream, so I rang the bell and at one point they opened the door. Mark was lying there in his own feces and no one wanted to help him. I got towels from my car and washed him. Kay said that he spent 23 hours a day at his son's bedside, and when Mark was told that his condition was permanent, he did not want to live any longer. Kay said that he'd always treated Belinda like his own daughter and felt that she was very jealous. He felt as though Mark was more in love with Belinda than she was with him, and was upset at the lack of support that Mark received when he reported her to the police. Thomas Sweet, the man who called 999 on the night of the attack, testified next. He said that he heard screams from the street and went out to see a tall, white man with short dark hair wearing just his underwear. Mr. Sweet said, in a very agonised way, he was saying something about acid. I thought he'd taken LSD and was having a really bad time on it. I initially thought he had paint chucked on him. I initially noticed it was on his body. It became evident that it was on his face. After calling 999 and being advised to shower Mark, Mr. Sweet noticed how bloodshot his eyes were. And when he asked if Mark wanted the police to come, Mark responded that they had to because she needs to pay. Another neighbour then took the stand, Dominic Wooding. He heard the screaming at around 3 a.m. on Wednesday 23rd, 2015. He said he heard Mark say that his ex had done it. Eleanor Elcox also lived in the area and heard a man screaming that he was going to die. And when she saw who it was, she thought he had clay on his face. Nicola White also lived on Ladysmith Road. She heard the screams and her doorbell rang shortly after. Mark was outside her flat and had rang her doorbell. She said the next morning she could see that he had been corroded where his hand had touched the brass. Ms. White said, I looked out of the window and there was a guy standing there in his boxer shorts and he looked a really odd colour from his head down to his shoulders. My doorbell rang a few times and I knew there was something desperate going on, and it was him. He looked like he was covered in clay, sort of mud, which I later realised was his skin melting. Ms. White testified that someone offered to take Mark to their shower and on the way there he pointed to a flat and said, she did it to me there. And when Ms. White looked in the direction of the flat, she saw someone on the couch. Ms. White described the person she saw as, she was Afro-Caribbean lady. She was on her mobile phone looking down, appearing to talk. She looked very sullen and serious and it was strange. Ms. White said that Mark had told the group that were aiding him that he had told his girlfriend he was leaving her and she did this to me. The court also heard from paramedic Dean Carter, who responded to the scene and found Mark with significant burns on his face, abdomen, chest and thighs. Mr. Carter said that Mark was frothing at the mouth and said that he could not see. He also asked the paramedics if he still had eyelids. PC Thomas Green was one of the first police officers at the scene on September 23rd. He said that Mark's eyes had turned grey and his irises had essentially dissolved. He described speaking with Mark in the ambulance and said that Mark indicated to a tattoo on his lower stomach that said Berliner. And as he told the officer, she needs to go to prison for this. PC Matthew Griffin testified about going to Berliner Wallace's flat. He said that the defendant was sitting on a sofa when they entered and asked her if she could tell them what the substance was that she'd used. Berliner answered that it was acid and indicated to a glass that was lying on the floor. She explained that she'd been distressing some fabric and brought the officers to the kitchen and showed them an unlabeled bottle of sulfuric acid in a cupboard. Berliner was then arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm. Continuing with witness testimony was Sean Groves, a criminal intelligence analyst for the police. He said that Berliner Wallace had purchased the acid from Amazon on September 2nd and subsequently deleted the page from her computer history. On September 13th, she had searched Google for the following. How to talk to an ex-boyfriend about getting back together. What to talk about with ex-boyfriend. Get your ex back permanently. Can you miss your ex after leaving them for someone else? I don't want to live anymore. Can I die from drinking sulfuric acid and painkillers? Cookies and internet history showed that she'd read a Telegraph article about a court case involving sulfuric acid, as well as articles on the New York Times and Guardian websites about the same. Mr. Groves said that Berliner had also viewed post-mortem images of a man who drank sulfuric acid, searched the internet for textile and acid burn fabric, and looked at images and videos featuring acid attack victims. Berliner Wallace took the stand to testify. She said that she had met Mark on a dating website for people with HIV and came to visit her in Bristol from the Netherlands. She said that when he came to visit her a second time, he never left. Berliner compared the beginning of their relationship to a party. She said that Mark had a temper. She said that Mark was racist and abusive throughout their time together. In 2011, he'd been arrested on suspicion of assault after kicking Berliner in the back and hitting her on the head. At the time of his arrest, the police had noticed the swastika he had drawn on his hand. Berliner had said that she could also be abusive towards Mark too, and had scratched and even bit him before. She sought help for her anger and told her counsellor that she felt as though she may destroy everything around her if someone set her off. She denied the allegation that she would hit herself and threatened to blame it on Mark. She said that she had bought the acid because she was having issues with the smell of drains on her property. When asked about the search history uncovered on her computer, she said that she had been suicidal and wanted to see what would happen if someone drank acid. she said that after Mark reported her to the police, she was devastated and attempted to take an overdose. Despite being warned not to contact Mark by the police, they were texting and seeing each other just days later. On the night of the attack, she said that Mark had told her to drink acid. She said they'd been arguing, and Mark pulled on her underwear, so she threw the contents of the glass over him to get him away from her. Belinna said that she believed it was water at the time. She said, "I thought it was water, I just wanted him to stop. He was hurting me. The contents went on him, I was trying to run away. Then he said, 'Oh, you threw acid at me.' I just turned around and I think I saw smoke or something. The only way I can describe it is black. I was so shocked, I said, 'Come on, let's get into the shower.' He was saying, 'It hurts, it hurts.' And he went in the shower." Belinna said that she believed Mark had poured the glass of acid and left it by the bedside in the hope that she would drink it with her nightly medication. When questioned by the defence, she said that he'd placed the glass on the table and said, "There you go, kill yourself, I'll watch." When questioned by the prosecution about the 82 articles that she had viewed about acid attacks, she said that she was just fascinated by the content and that it was just a coincidence and bad luck that she happened to throw sulfuric acid in her ex-partner's face just days later.
The jury of 10 men and 2 women retired to deliberate and return with a unanimous verdict after 15 hours of talks. Berliner was cleared of murder and manslaughter, but found guilty of throwing a corrosive substance with intent. On May 23rd of that year, Berliner Wallace was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 12 years to be served. Presiding Judge Nicola Davis said in her sentencing statement, "Your intention was to burn, disfigure and disable Mark Van Dongen so that he would not be attractive to any other woman. It was an act of pure evil. The acid immediately began to burn Mark, causing him excruciating pain. You did nothing to help him. You chose not to call an ambulance. Instead, you sat on the sofa of your living room and telephoned a friend. In agony, Mark ran into the road where neighbours tried their best to help and called the emergency services. Others heard his painful screams, as you must have done. Still, you chose to ignore his screams. Nothing better demonstrates your malicious and callous intention than your refusal to provide any help, even when Mark was screaming in pain. The burns which Mark sustained covered 2/3 of his face and a large percentage of his upper chest, arms and upper thighs. The burns were almost all full thickness, affecting 25% of his total body space. As a result of skin graft procedures, over 40% of Mark's total body area was affected by the burns. Jonathan Pleat, a consultant in burn surgery in Southmeath and the University Hospital of Bristol, said there had been no equivalent patient with similar extensive injuries following a chemical attack. He said that the pain suffered by Mark Van Dongen was excruciating. The acid would have caused intense burning pain within seconds of application to the skin. Mark spent a total of 11 months in intensive care. He underwent a number of operative procedures. His left leg had to be amputated because of the restriction of blood supply. He lost the sight in his left eye, and damage was caused to the sight in his right eye. The doctors had to use the strongest pain relief, namely opiates, which in themselves caused difficult side effects. For 4 months, Mark was not really able to communicate. He sustained not only burns, but injury to the systems of his body. When ICU, he suffered recurrent chest infections, septicemic shock. His kidneys were injured. There were problems with his gut and bleeding from a bell. His heartbeat and liver function were altered. He received daily input from a team of physiotherapists. Notwithstanding the efforts of all, Mark developed critical illness neuropathy, as a result of which he gradually lost the use of muscles, such that at the time of his discharge from the hospital in November 2016, he was paralysed from the neck down with no movement in his upper arms and legs. Had Mark survived, there would have been further operations. he would have required extensive care for the rest of his life. Another treating clinician said that his physical appearance would never be restored to anything which could be described as normal. It would be drastically different and unrecognisable to friends and family. He had been permanently, drastically disfigured. The facial scarring was categorised at the severe end of very severe scarring. The doctor said that Mark had suffered emotional and psychological damage, which would have affected his life in addition to the extensive physical damage. As a result of the injuries which you inflicted, Mark Van Dongen chose to end his life by undergoing voluntary euthanasia in Belgium. The doctors who examined Mark Van Dongen following his application for euthanasia concluded that this was a case of unbearable physical and psychological suffering, despite maximum medicinal support. They authorised the procedure. Mark's father, in his evidence and a statement to this court, described the suffering of his son in England and Belgium. Mark Van Dongen died on the 2nd of January 2017. By reason of your acquittal on count 1, the charge of murder, I do not sentence you for the fact that as a result of these injuries, Mark Van Dongen chose to take his life. I do sentence you for the harm which you inflicted, the catastrophic and life-changing injuries, the 15 months of acute physical and psychological suffering of Mark Van Dongen. Having carried out this horrific attack, you then told lie after lie. When interviewed by the police, you sought to place the blame upon Mark Van Dongen, falsely alleging that he had poured the acid into the glass on your bedside table, intending that you should drink it. It was an account which you gave in September 2015 and maintained through this trial. It was an account which was properly rejected by the careful and attentive jury at your trial. Not only did you make this wholly false accusation to the police and throughout this trial, you further sought to destroy the name and character of Mark Van Dongen, alleging that he was the abuser in your relationship, that he had subjected you to verbal and physical abuse. Mark Van Dongen is no longer alive. He was unable to defend himself against any of your accusations. However, former colleagues told of Mark's account to them of you threatening to injure yourself by one means or another in the event that he would leave you, such that the police would be informed and he would be blamed for the injuries which you had inflicted upon yourself. I accept their evidence. I also accept that Mark told a colleague and his father that he was scared of you. He was right to be so because he had some idea of what you were capable of. I do not regard it as a coincidence that in the course of your many researches of sulfuric acid on 14th of September 2015, you clicked onto an article in the Daily Telegraph. A report of a criminal trial in which a male was alleged to have forced or tricked his girlfriend to drink a glass of acid. That gave you your defence, one you had considered even before you carried out your attack. It was another example of the planning which preceded the throwing of acid upon the man who had been your supportive partner for 5 years. Even when he sought to end the relationship, Mark Van Dongen said he would continue to provide financial support for you, but that was not enough. The texts which you sent him in August and September 2015 demonstrate the emotional blackmail to which you were subjecting him because he wanted to leave you. You made 14 silent phone calls to his new girlfriend. It was because of his concern for you and your previous threats of self-harm that Mark came and stayed at your home on the night of 22nd of September. He returned at 10 p.m. It was shortly before 3 a.m. that you chose to attack him. Only you know what occurred in those hours to anger you. I believe it likely that, yet again, Mark was seeking to leave you. In throwing the acid, you knew exactly what you were doing. It is what you had thought about and planned. Without a thought for anyone but yourself, this is what you did. This was not the first time you had inflicted injury upon Mark. I am satisfied that in 2011 you threw hot water over him, as a result of which he sustained injury and sought medical treatment. He told the doctor he had accidentally tipped tea over himself. In the summer of 2015, Mark showed his colleagues and new girlfriend scratches on his body, which I find were inflicted by you. When angry, you are capable of using violence. Anger is a part of your character, and you know that. In December 2013, you told a counsellor at the University West of England that you had been physically violent to and had threatened and intimidated other people. You told her that you got very angry and at times threatened or intimidated your boyfriend. You had hit out and thrown things. In January 2014, you spoke to a psychiatric nurse at the same university about trying to control your emotions, in particular anger. You described an adrenaline rush when someone says the wrong thing, and you said you felt like you could destroy everything around you. You told the nurse that you used to have problems managing anger, but you got it under control again. In August 2015, you told the same nurse that you were not feeling well as a result of the breakup with Mark. You had not been expecting it, you had not been coping well, you felt depressed, angry, betrayed, and anxious. The nurse notes that you described how anger can be a problem for you, that you can act impulsively at times. You worry that this may cause problems with Mark and his new girlfriend if you were acting on anger. In your evidence, you spoke of a difficult childhood and teenage years in South Africa, of becoming HIV positive as a result of being gang raped when age 20. Having listened to your evidence given over 3 days, I treat much of what you say with considerable caution. Even allowing for a difficult childhood, nothing can begin to excuse your actions. There are no sentencing council guidelines specific to this offence. Some assistance can be derived from the sentencing council guidelines in respect to Section 18 assault, namely causing grievous bodily harm with intent. Applying those guidelines, it is accepted that your offending would fall within Category 1, greater harm and higher culpability. As to higher culpability, there are a number of aggravating factors, a significant degree of premeditation, the use of a weapon, in this case acid, the deliberate targeting of a vulnerable victim. Factors increasing the seriousness of offending are ongoing effects upon the victim, previous violence to the same victim, and abuse of a position of trust. Mark was sleeping in your bed in your flat by implication at your invitation. For the purpose of this sentence, you have no relevant convictions. On your behalf, Miss Elder informed the court that no reports were sought. I did not consider reports to be necessary. Section 225 of the Criminal Justice Act 2003 provides for the passing of discretionary life sentences as follows. This section applies where a person aged 18 or over is convicted of a serious offence committed after the commencement of this section, and the court is of the opinion that there is a significant risk to members of the public or serious harm occasioned by the commission by him of further specified offences. If the offence is one in respect of which the offender would be apart from this section be liable to imprisonment for life, and the court considers that the seriousness of the offence is such as to justify the imposition of a sentence of imprisonment for life, the court must impose a sentence of imprisonment for life. You are age 49. The offence of which you have been charged is a serious offence. I find you are dangerous for the following reasons. You chose to carry out this attack using 98% concentrated sulfuric acid, knowing the damage it could cause. You deliberately threw the contents of a glass of the acid at the face and towards the upper body of Mark Van Dongen when he was in bed, wearing only boxer shorts, and had been sleeping until immediately before the attack. Your conduct can properly be described as sadistic. You ignored Mark's cries of pains and chose to telephone a friend rather than the emergency services, when you would have known that Mark urgently required medical help. This was a premeditated offence which involved not only the purchase of 1 litre of acid, but research into the damage it was capable of causing. Your attack caused catastrophic and life-changing injuries to Mark Van Dongen, 15 months of intense physical and psychological suffering. Your previous violence towards Mark Van Dongen in 2011 and 2015. Anger is part of your character which you acknowledge, and over which you have been found to have demonstrated no control. On the clearest evidence, you have been shown to be a manipulative and controlling woman who has lied without compunction or conscience in an attempt to avoid culpability. At the core of the significant risk of serious harm which you pose to those, be it family or persons in a relationship with you, is your anger which you are still unable to control. It is coupled with a brain capable of working out how to inflict damage upon the person who has incurred your anger. It has manifested itself in the most serious of offending, causing immeasurable harm. Life imprisonment is the only sentence which reflects not only the nature of your offending, but the continuing risk which you pose. In passing a life sentence, the minimum term to be served before you can be considered for release on license has to be determined. In my judgment, the appropriate determinant term of imprisonment would have been 24 years. In accordance with sentencing practice when setting the minimum term for an indeterminate life sentence, the minimum term will be half of the equivalent determinant sentence, namely 12 years.
Mark's father Case was disappointed at the outcome of the trial. He delivered his victim impact statement with the help of an interpreter. It read, "My son Mark was gentle, sensitive, accommodating, too good for this world. As a result of which, even his friends occasionally took advantage of him." Nothing was ever too much for him, and in particular, he always tried to resolve any problems as they arose. As a child, he had many interests and a healthy curiosity in experiencing other environments. That is why, in his youth, he accompanied me in the school holidays when I drove my truck to Germany, France, Italy, and Spain. I find it impossible to believe the accounts that I have heard in the courtroom in Berliner's description of Mark. Mark was taught to have respect for women, and I find it therefore impossible to believe Berliner's account. It is unforgivable because Mark was no longer here to defend himself. I received a call from my other son, Bart, who had learnt from his mother that his brother was in hospital in Bristol after an attack with sulfuric acid. The police had managed to track the phone number of my first wife, but Mark had already been in hospital for 10 days by that time. I immediately got into the car with my wife, Rita, and we drove to Bristol. We arrived early the next morning. At the reception of Southmead Hospital, we asked about where Mark was. The receptionist brought us to the intensive care unit. There were 6 bedrooms, but at first I couldn't find Mark and I thought that the police had made a mistake. Then, the doctor told me he was in room 1. I had been unable to recognise my own son. He was in a light coma and seemed to respond to my voice. I didn't leave his bed for about 4 months. Rita went home after 3 weeks and returned on a regular basis. Bart and his wife Angelique also made regular visits to Mark. Mark's eyes were bandaged, but he managed to tickle the palm of my hand. Every day I had to disinfect myself before I entered the room. I alerted the doctors to the fact that Mark's foot felt cold, but they assured me that this was normal. A few days later, I noticed that his left foot had turned black. It set off warning bells with the staff, and there came a difficult time when his leg needed to be amputated. I indicated at the time that Mark wouldn't want this, but the doctors got me to understand that we had no choice in the matter. All that time, Mark was unable to communicate with me. Mark told me at a later stage that he was aware of the amputation, and that he had felt like a loaf of bread when his leg was amputated slice by slice. After approximately 4 months, Mark was at last able to communicate by sticking out his tongue when I was reading through the alphabet letter by letter. After some time, he was moved from intensive care to the burns ward. At first, Mark didn't realise how badly injured he was. He went through the hellish pain of skin grafts and unbearable itching. He was on the maximum painkillers and anti-itching tablets. After several weeks, Mark got a lung infection and needed to be readmitted from the burns ward to the intensive care ward. There, he received a tube in his throat for the second time. He spent a long time in intensive care before he was readmitted to the burns ward. He was only allowed to return after the tube had been removed from his throat. At that point, he was promised to receive physiotherapy and the use of a small pool in that ward, which he was looking forward to. In fact, he never received that therapy. After more than 1 year in Southmead Hospital, he was told that it was time for him to be transferred to the care home in England. They told us that they'd found the best home for him in England, in Gloucester. He was to be moved on a Tuesday. In those days, I spent 2.5 to 3 days each week with Mark, and I went home to work on the weekdays. Mark was due to be moved on the Tuesday. He insisted that I didn't need to stay with him for the transfer. On the Monday and Tuesday that week, I was back to work in Belgium. On the Tuesday evening after coming home from work, I received a phone call from Mark. He was completely distraught. I drove to Gloucester that same evening and arrived outside the care home at 5 a.m. I had intended to have a nap in the car. When I went to stretch my legs outside, I heard Mark screaming. When the front door eventually opened to me, it was incredible what I found. Mark was lying in his own stool. The carers in Gloucester were mystified why Mark had been placed in their home because it was completely unsuitable for him. I didn't leave his side after that. At that point, he became determined to move to Belgium, and he asked me to arrange it for him. The ambulance arrived on Friday in Gloucester and left on Saturday morning for the Maria Hospital in Overpelt, Belgium. On his arrival, Mark was admitted to the palliative care unit in a single room, since he was so badly injured that he couldn't mingle with other patients. I didn't leave his side again. To relieve his pain and itching, I spent entire days rubbing him and moving his arms because he was completely paralysed. Then, several neurologists assessed Mark at his request. Mark wanted a second opinion. All the experts reached the same conclusion, namely that Mark would remain paralysed for the rest of his life. Mark still felt positive that he wanted to complete a formal application for euthanasia anyway, because he'd already suffered so much pain. Just before Christmas, Mark incurred another lung infection. The doctors came to tell him that a tube needed to be inserted in his throat for the third time. This time, it was 99% certain that he would lose his voice for the rest of his life. Long conversations took place between the doctors, Mark, and me in his room. It was between Christmas and New Year. The doctors said that if no tube was inserted in his throat, and if the lung infection continued to develop at the same pace, Mark would not survive for longer than 3 days. Mark was very much opposed to the third tracheotomy because he wanted to be able to talk to me until the end. If the lung infection were to develop at a slower pace, he could expect to survive for 2 to 3 weeks before suffering a terrible death through asphyxia. Mark said, "I have suffered pain, itching, and enough misery, and I'm tired of fighting." By then, the euthanasia application was fully complete. On January 2nd, Mark wanted to take the last journey in his bed with me, and the catheter was inserted in the cardiac room. The euthanasia took place at 7:15 p.m, and Mark died. The fact that Mark, a 29-year-old man, a recent graduate, decided to commit euthanasia says something about the condition that he was in and the amount of pain that he was suffering. He said, "Dad, I'm tired of fighting. I've suffered so much pain and I can't take any more. Please, let me go." The events have had a major impact on my other son, Bart, and his wife, Angelique, and their 2 children. They came to visit Mark regularly in hospital in England. And when Mark was suffering badly at the end, he pulled himself together to laugh and joke with his then 13-year-old nephew. Bart and Angelique attended one day of the trial. They drove straight home on the same evening because their children were distraught since they now associate England with what happened to Mark. Belinna was always treated as our own daughter. Rita and I often went to visit Mark and Belinna. We spent a New Year's Eve in Bristol and they spent one Christmas with us in Belgium. I treated her as my own child and I trusted her. Belinna was sometimes frustrated because I used to speak Dutch to Mark and it made her suspicious because she thought we were talking about her, which was not the case. I had the impression that Mark was more in love with her than vice versa. He asked me for financial help at one point. I told Belinna that I felt that she should pull her weight by looking for a part-time job of her own for 10 hours per week. She took it so badly that she became furious and it led to an argument with Mark. For her, it was all about money, 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 provided she didn't have to do anything for it herself. After the attack, I knew that Belinna had been arrested. Mark confirmed it when he was able to communicate it with them. I hope that justice will prevail and that she will be locked up for the rest of her life because she is a danger to society. I feel like a broken man, completely drained, and the old case no longer exists. Mark and I lost our battle. It has also had an enormous impact on my financial situation. It is a snowball, still growing in size. I used to have a very good marriage with Rita for 11 years, but I'm no longer my old self and I'm living in a friend's apartment. I'm trying to find some peace for what happened. I'm living one day to the next and we will see what tomorrow brings. I started to smoke again on the day of my first hospital visit. I can no longer sleep. I take antidepressants and sleeping tablets. I feel entirely drained and exhausted. I'm also seeing a psychiatrist. In the past, nothing would faze me, but now I have lead in my shoes. I miss Mark terribly because he was my boy, my son. Listening to his screams after the attack on the 999 recording was horrendous. Hearing the defence case here was very difficult because it didn't reflect the truth. Financially, I am completely wiped out. I now have a mortgage on the house that used to be paid off, and now have a loan. I may still end up on the street as a tramp. I used up all my money to visit Mark in England and was unable to work for a considerable period of time. It is still possible that I will lose my job because yet again I have spent 4 or 5 weeks in England. However, I promised Mark that I would be standing here in his name, that I would not miss one minute of the trial, and I would make every effort to make sure that she gets the sentence that she deserves. Despite all the consequences for my health and financial status, I don't regret it for a minute, and I would do it all again. I hope that I will get over it one day. A GoFundMe was set up to help Kays get his life back on track and raised a significant amount of money, but he lost something priceless, his son. An amendment was made to the 1972 Poisons Act that meant that a license is required to import or possess sulfuric acid above 15% concentrate. This will hopefully prevent many horrific acid attacks in the future.
In the UK, 2.5% of men and 4.8% of women were victims of domestic abuse by a partner between 2018 and 2019. Over 10% of male victims have considered taking their own life due to the abuse they endure from their partner. Male victims are almost 3 times less likely to disclose the abuse than female victims, and often suffer in silence. Some victims are able to seek help and even leave. Mark Van Dongen sought help and even left Berlina Wallace, but such was her hold on him that he went back to her. When Berlina felt as though she was losing Mark, she decided that if she couldn't have him, no one could, and she indirectly caused his death. If not legally, consequentially. Her actions left him in constant, unrelenting agony, and his condition would never improve. We will have a list of supports in our show notes. As always, our sources will be listed on our website. Thank you for listening to this episode of Crime Lapse. If you like the show, please consider leaving us a review. We'll have a Love the Podcast link in the show notes where you can do so. You can also support our independent production by becoming a patron on patreon.com/crimelapse. We'll be back with our next episode soon. Take care.